As we anticipate the coming of Easter, Reverend Mike and I thought it would be a great time to take another look at our wayshower, Jesus, and the many sides of Jesus. He wasn't just a two-dimensional figure or just a historical figure. In many beliefs, Jesus is presented as super holy, a healer, a preacher, and so far above us that he really doesn't seem real to us. And that's really a shame, because Jesus' otherworldliness is so emphasized in other beliefs that we tend to forget that Jesus had a human side. We forget the history that surrounded him. We forget the culture in which he was immersed, and that affected how he acted and reacted. And so as we move forward to that defining moment, which is the resurrection, it's good to set the stage of who was this character, Jesus? What was he? And what really was his message? Not what the church decided was his message, but what was his message? Because he never came to start a church. That may surprise some people, but that was never his intention. So over the next 7 weeks, we'll be looking at Jesus' many sides. You know, Jesus the Jew, Jesus the rebel, Jesus the rabbi, Jesus the healer, the message he brought, and try and get some clues about the God that he knew that was very intimate to him. And so hopefully we'll get a whole new feel of this character, Jesus. And today I would like to talk about Jesus the healer. When we look at a broad picture of Jesus' ministry, his life, his teachings, his actions, his was a ministry of healing. When you look at it, healing physically, healing people emotionally, healing people spiritually, all those different levels of healing occurred as Jesus taught and walked through the land. And I'd like to look just as an example of just three of the healing episodes that are in the scriptures, because there's so many levels and so many ways that you can look at them. And the first one was Jesus' healing of the centurion's servant. Jesus had been teaching and healing all manner of people, and the word was getting out. I mean, crowds would follow him. You know, please heal me. If I just touch his cloak, I'll be healed. And a Roman centurion heard about Jesus and what he did. And this particular Roman centurion had a beloved servant that was critically ill. And the centurion approached Jesus and asked him to heal his servant. And so Jesus decides, he starts on his way to go to the home of the centurion to heal his servant. But the centurion stops Jesus. He says, no. And he says, I'm a man in authority and under authority. I mean, a centurion was someone, it was, you know, that governed the military force and ruled men under him. And because of his rank, I give orders, he said, and they're obeyed by my soldiers under my command and also my servants under command. I say, do this, and they do it. Basically, he says to Jesus, you don't have to make the trip. You don't have to come to my house. Just say the word, and my servant will be healed. Just give the command, and it would be obeyed. And the scripture reports the healing happened. It was done. And I thought, what faith of this Gentile Roman centurion, of this Jewish healer, that he had such power that all he had to do was speak the word at a distance and the servant would be healed. Interesting thought in this story. What this really is, yes, it's a healing, but what it is an interaction of power to power when you think about it. The centurion, a Gentile, was very much about temporal power. He was an officer in the army, responsible for enforcing discipline and order in Israel. Jesus, a Jew, was all about spiritual power. This Gentile, this temporal power, recognized and acknowledged and deferred to that spiritual power which was embodied in Jesus. In effect, saying, you've got the power, just say the words and it's a done deal. Pretty awesome when you think about that belief and that faith and that knowledge on the part of the centurion. So what does this story teach us? Well, it teaches us that temporal power can accomplish much, but it only goes so far. You know how we try and manipulate and control and command situations? Sometimes they still don't move the way we want them to move. But spiritual power outranks temporal power and can work healings and can make things happen in spectacular ways. If we're dealing with a situation or a healing or whatever, we have to ask ourselves, are we including that spiritual element in the healing work that we're doing? The next story I want to talk about is the healing at the Pool of Bethesda. I love this story because the story is there's a man who's paralyzed, and he has been laying there for 38 years next to this pool. And the thought was the angel would come down and stir the pool of water. And when the angel did, the first person in the pool got healed. And so here's this man. He's 38 years sitting by the pool. And you think in that time, people didn't live to be much older than 40, 45, maybe 50 was considered old age. And Jesus comes along, and I love this. He says, do you want to be made well? And I always think in Scripture, it should also say, duh, you know, on the part of the man who's paralyzed. Of course, I want to be. But he doesn't say that, which I find really interesting. He gives all these excuses. He said, I've been sitting here and, you know, nobody comes and helps me in the pool. And will you be made well? And it doesn't show that the man says anything. And Jesus says, pick up your pallet and walk. And I think, you know, that's so like us. We want to be made well. We want to be better. We want to get rid of our addictions. We want to get rid of our problems. We want to get rid of our insufficiency in thought. And yet, if Jesus the way shower comes along and says, will you be made well? Do we go, yes? Or do we make excuses? No, I can't do this because of that, because of me. Catherine Ponder, in her book, Dynamic Laws of Healing, differentiates between the words cure and healing. And she says, cure is to eliminate the current distress. So, for example, you go to a doctor and you've got a pain in the whatever, and the doctor gives you some pills, it relaxes the muscle, and the pain goes away. However, if you keep doing the things that cause that problem, that pain, it's going to come back. A healing, according to Catherine Ponder, is to make whole the entire person, spirit, soul, and body. A cure is kind of temporary. A healing is about wholeness in the spiritual realm. And we have to realize also, when we talk about the spiritual realm and the temporal realm, there are people who don't seem to be physically healed on the outside, but yet they are so spiritually and mentally healed and whole. It's awesome to be around these people. Very often, as we're looking for the healing, we stop too soon. Once the physical ramifications are removed, or once the situation changes, or somebody goes out of our life, we think, aha, the situation is healed. There's more to be done, almost always. Actually, when you look at the story of the Pool of Bethesda and the healing, Jesus kind of had the easier part. The hard work was just starting for the paralytic. After 38 years, that was his identity. He woke up in the morning, he was paralyzed by the pool. In the evening, he went to sleep, he was paralyzed by the pool. Paralyzed, I'm sure, after all those years, feeling helpless, definitely unproductive. After the cure, after Jesus said, take up your pallet and walk. Because the paralyzed man never said yes. Did this formerly paralyzed man walk freely? Did he then take care of himself and his family? Did he get a job at Walmart being a greeter, you know? Or a couple months later, did we find him back at the pool? Clinging to what he knew, clinging to his image of himself, how others identified him, because it's not always totally about us. It's how others see us. Do others keep us paralyzed? In any healing work we attempt to do, or any healing we attempt to do of a situation, the big question is, will you be healed? Really? The third story I want to talk about is the woman caught in adultery. And Jesus is in the temple, and he is teaching and preaching to people there in the temple. And so the scribes and Pharisees bring a woman to stand in front of Jesus and all the assembled people, because they're trying to trick him. They're always looking for ways to try to get him on a hook that they can say, see, he's a troublemaker. And so they bring this woman to stand. And they said, she was caught in the very act of adultery. And the law of Moses says she is to be stoned to death. And so Jesus didn't say anything, according to the scripture. Just kind of sits there and looks down. And finally, he says, let anyone who is without sin cast the first stone. And the scripture says, slowly, one by one, led by the elders, the crowd dispersed. But that's not the end of the story. Because now Jesus is sitting here with this woman, and he says to her, woman, where'd everybody go? Yeah. Is there no one here to condemn you? And she says, no. And he says, neither will I condemn you. go and sin no more. It's not so much that she was caught in the sin, but now make the decision to live differently. There's several things, again, going on in this story. What's pretty obvious in the story is the judgment and the self-righteousness of those Pharisees and the elders. And what Jesus does so often, and this is a beautiful example of it, he holds up a mirror to these people, to these pompous elders. And he does this again and again and again because they're so right all the time. They know what they know. And so he's holding up a mirror to these elders and teaching them and us about compassion. Jesus was quite the psychologist. He knew how much our judgments and self-righteousness is about self-projection. How we judge and what we judge says a lot about us. It's like, you know, all this whole big battle going on about the freedom of religion right now. Those people that are pushing for that, it's the freedom of their religion, not my religion, not my belief. And I always, when I read this story about the woman caught in adultery, I think, doesn't it take two to commit adultery? I mean, is it just me that wonders about that? How come it is only the woman, if she's caught in adultery, and they say in the story she was caught right in the act, how come it's only the woman that gets stoned to death? Again, levels in this story. Jesus is saying a lot about the rigidity of the law, its fairness or lack thereof. Are women held to a higher standard? Are only men allowed to be forgiven according to this law? I would bet later in the day there was a lot of mumbling and grumbling among the elders and the Pharisees. These same self-righteous people of the law. When it comes to healing on any level, and the conditions that are needed to truly allow healing. And we need to pay attention to the law, whatever that law is for us, spiritual, family, culture, nationality, peer group. Is there compassion there? Or just self-righteousness? Almost in every situation where there's this conflict between the law and what's compassionate, something has to change. But we don't want to do that. The backstory here, as wonderful as all of these healings are, and I could have chosen several more, what we didn't mention, or what I didn't mention in that, before all these healing episodes, Jesus always came apart to pray. He came apart to be recharged, to be filled up with that power and presence that would let him be wise, that would let him be compassionate, that would let him do the healings, that would let him perform the miracles. But we sometimes forget. Jesus, the human, said, "Of myself, I can do nothing." Jesus, this person that we say is just so otherworldly. He said, of myself can't do anything except that the Father does through me. For the strength and the wisdom and the power to do what he did and accomplish what he accomplished. Always hand and hand in hand so that God could work through him out into the world. So what is that healing work we're trying to do? What is that situation? We also have to remember Jesus' words of healing to us. He said, I of myself can do nothing except what the Father does through me. And these things you will do. And greater things will you do. And so the torch has been passed for us to be more compassionate, to be more wise, to do more healings, to accomplish more, and to change those laws, wherever they come from, to make that outcome possible. And so let's take that thought into meditation.